హరే కృష్ణ. ఇట్ ఈస్ అ గ్రేట్ ప్లెజర్ ఫర్ మీ టు బి హియర్ అగైన్ ఆఫ్టర్ సో మెనీ డెకేడ్స్. I passed the train station on the way here, and I did remember the train station. And of course the temple building. Yesterday I spoke about my spiritual journey, the beginning of my spiritual journey, and on the request of some devotees. And some devotees also requested me to continue the discussion today. The journey in and of itself may have some interest, but the important point is what we can learn from the journey, which we can apply in our own lives. Because there are certain universal principles that are recorded in the words of sadhu, shastra, and guru. And we should know those principles and apply them in our lives. One principle is that we must associate with devotees. Without the association of devotees, we cannot take up devotional service. In Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami, he stated, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Vata Beat. The living entities are wandering throughout the universe, or throughout many universes, according to their past activities. But when one is fortunate by the grace of Guru and Krishna, one gets the seed of devotional service. And then, according to Lord Chaitanya, one should become a gardener, a mali, and plant the seed within one's heart and water the seed by chanting and hearing about Krishna. Furthermore, one should protect the tender creeper of devotional service from wild animals who might come into one's garden and trample the creeper or uproot the creeper. And so one should fence the creeper all around. And the fencing is the circle of pure devotees. So the association of pure devotees is essential. Lord Chaitanya also says that alongside the devotional creeper, weeds may grow. The weeds of material desire, or the desire for impersonal liberation. And Lord Chaitanya says that those weeds may very closely resemble the creeper of devotion. But one must be very alert and vigilant and detect if any such weeds enter, and keep them apart from the devotional creeper, or uproot them, really. And even then, the association of devotees is very important, because the weeds are subtle, and we may not be able to detect them if we are on our own. But in the association of devotees, we can see more clearly what is what. And if we are somehow blinded, they can open our eyes with their instructions. So in terms of my story, I had been looking for a guru. Actually, my goal was perfect happiness, but I had concluded that one could not achieve perfect happiness in material life. And therefore, I needed to take up a spiritual practice that would lead me to a higher consciousness. And that in order to take up the practice, not just take it up, but find out what it is, and then take it up and follow it to the goal, I needed a guru. And over a period of time, I met many of the gurus and masters who had come to America from India. And also others. There were also local gurus, but gurus who were American, who had come in touch with masters or teachers from Japan or India, and they were teaching what they had learned from their masters. But I was not satisfied with any of them. And then finally, by Krishna's grace, I met Srila Prabhupada in Boston. And he was different from all the others, because all the others were impersonalists of one sort or another. No one besides Srila Prabhupada had taught that God is a person and you are also a person eternally, and your position and your perfection is to serve the Supreme Personality of God. And I've met many Indians in America who came to Krishna consciousness in America. And they said that the same thing, that Srila Prabhupada was the only one who gave a clear conception of God. Who is God? Who are the demigods? And what is the method for developing our eternal relationship with God? And many have said that it would have been very hard for them to come to Krishna consciousness if they had stayed in India. And in fact, when they go back to visit, they have difficulty with their family members and friends, because they come back and no eating meat, fish or eggs, or even onions or garlic, no taking of intoxicants, including coffee and tea, and no gambling and other things. And their family members and friends in India, they thought, you know, you were going to America, we thought you would become more expert in these things and teach us, and now you're not even touching them. So Srila Prabhupada's contribution is monumental. On both sides of the ocean. So coming back to my journey. So Srila Prabhupada came and gave a talk at my university in Boston. And then the next night I went to the temple. And then I understood that he was my guru. He was not like the others. And then every night I would come to hear him speak. His program was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the temple, and Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday outside, usually at a university, but sometimes in other places, and then the Sunday feast. So, internally, that was my goal, to achieve perfect happiness. And externally, if you will, my goal was to do good for others. So after hearing Srila Prabhupada speak for a few days, I asked a question that you have been telling us about service to God, but what about service to man. And Srila Prabhupada replied that, why are you and others coming here? You're coming because you're getting something. And then he said, what is service? Service means to relieve the suffering of another person. Someone may be hungry, and you might feed him, but in a few hours he'll be hungry again. But if you give someone Krishna consciousness, all of his problems are solved permanently. And he told the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, as many of you may know, was the son of a king. And when he was playing on the lap of his father, his stepmother, who was the king's favorite, rebuked him that you cannot sit on the throne. You are not born from my womb. And the king was so attached to the co-wife that he sided with her and took Dhruva off of his lap, which was very cruel. So Dhruva went to his mother and explained what had happened. And his mother said that your father favors your stepmother, and I don't think I can do anything to help you. So then he said, well, who can help me? And she said, I think only God can help you. Where is God? Well, I don't know, but many sages and saintly persons go to the forest to find God, so maybe you can find him there. So Dhruva went, and in his own way, as a boy of 5 years, he was looking for God. Looking in the bushes, looking behind the trees, looking under the stones and logs. And so God, within Dhruva's heart, understood that he's very serious to find me. So Krishna sent a guru, Narada Muni. From within the heart of Narada Muni, Krishna dictated to him that he should go and instruct Dhruva. And when he found Dhruva, he instructed him that you're just a child. You shouldn't be taking things so seriously. You should go home and play and enjoy like other boys of your age. And then maybe when you're older, you can look for God. And Dhruva Maharaj said that if you can help me find God, it's very good. But if you're going to tell me to go home, then you can go home. He was very determined. And You could say he passed the test of the spiritual master. As Srila Prabhupada said, one must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. So Narada instructed him to chant the holy name, and there are many details. And after some months, Dhruva's desire was fulfilled, and the Lord came to him and asked him to accept some benediction. And Dhruva replied that, "My Lord, I'm completely satisfied. I don't want any benediction." And the Lord said, "Well, what about your kingdom?" And Dhruva said that that kingdom was just like a piece of broken glass, and now I've gotten you, who are like the most valuable jewel. So I'm millions of times more satisfied. And then Srila Prabhupada said that this is service, that to give someone something that makes him so satisfied that he has no other desire. And Srila Prabhupada told the story of Alexander the Great. When he came to India, there was a saintly person sitting in meditation. And Alexander the Great was very impressed. And he said, "You know, I can give you anything, whatever you want." And that saintly person said, "I want only one thing. Just step to the side, because you're blocking the sun." In other words, he was so satisfied internally that there was nothing anyone could give him, not even Alexander the Great. So this is real service. That's what Srila Prabhupada was saying. And he said that when you get Krishna consciousness, you're so satisfied that, like, no more cheating. And he used the word no more pickpocketing. Now, although I was basically an honest person and prided myself on being honest, but I did have one weakness. One of my friends had told me about, not exactly pickpocketing, but shoplifting. And he's like, "You know, you just go in the shop and, you know, you just see something." They didn't have all the sophisticated security then they have now, and you just put it in your pocket or put it in your bag. It was sort of like pickpocketing. And when Srila Prabhupada said, "No more pickpocketing," I thought, "Oh my God, it's like, why did he use that word? That's what I do." But then I thought, well, that's good. That's good, you know, because if I become Krishna conscious, I'll be so satisfied I won't do that. So, internally, I understood that this was going to make me completely happy and satisfied, and externally I understood that this was going to be the best way to serve others. So I was satisfied. So like this, some days passed, and then one day when I came to the temple, there was like a lot of activity. And I asked the devotees, what's happening? And they said, Srila Prabhupada is leaving. And I didn't know that Srila Prabhupada would leave. I came to Krishna consciousness, he was there. I just assumed that he would always be there. I said, he's leaving? He said, yes, he has many centers and he travels from one center to the other. So we're getting ready to go to the airport. Do you want to come with us? I said, yes, I do. So at the airport, I saw that almost all the devotees were crying. And so I asked Arundhati, who was one of the devotees, who I could speak to easily. And she replied that that Srila Prabhupada had said that on the absolute platform, meeting and separation are the same. Both are occasions of transcendental ecstasy. And that sounded like a good answer, but I wasn't completely sure if it was practical. But it did sound like a perfect answer. So we were all at the gate, and Srila Prabhupada boarded the aircraft. And the devotees waited. They were looking out the window. And I asked Arundhati, why are the devotees waiting? And she said that Srila Prabhupada said when the spiritual master leaves, the devotees should watch the airplane until it completely disappears in the sky and the last traces of the fuel are gone. Just like when Krishna left Vrindavan, the gopis watched the chariot until it completely disappeared in the distance. So, up until then, I thought everything about Krishna consciousness was perfect. Perfect philosophy, perfect process, perfect guru. Everything about it was perfect, but then I thought maybe this is the one defect that the spiritual master has to leave. Anyway, back at the temple, maybe the next day, during prasadam time, a devotee brought a jar of dal, which was Srila Prabhupada's remnants. And all the other devotees were like so excited to get Srila Prabhupada's remnants. And I was sitting in the, in one of the rows on the floor, and when the devotee came to me, she explained that from the material point of view, the dal has gone off. So I don't know if you want to have it or not. I saw all the others were really eager to get it, and I said, well, everyone else is taking it, I'll also take it. So she gave me some, and at the initial contact between the doll and my tongue, it was like, ooh, it's like she said, it's gone off. It's like putrid. But after the initial contact, it's like I experienced a different level of it. It was like the sweetest nectar. It's like I'd never tasted anything like it. Wow, this is amazing. And everything was new then. So I'd had accepted Srila Prabhupada and surrendered to him, but I was still observing. We were trained in college in the scientific method to, observation. So in the Boston Temple, it would have been true of any temple, but in the Boston Temple, they would, offer the food to the deities. And the food that was offered directly on the plate to the deities was called Mahaprasad. Everything was prasad, but that was Mahaprasad. And so I would taste the Mahaprasad and compare the taste to the regular prasad. And it tasted different. I felt it was like sweeter. But I didn't know if it was just my imagination. Am I trying to convince myself that this is real? And then one day, when we were sitting and having breakfast, so one of the lady devotees, Saradhya, said to the temple president, Satsvarupa Maharaj, that, Satsvarupa, did you ever notice that the deity's Mahaprasad all tastes like it has sugar sprinkled on it? And I thought, oh, I'm not the only one who's... This is real. So on so that statement that on the absolute platform meeting and separation are the same, both are occasions of ecstasy, it was really on my mind, but I hadn't experienced it. And then one day, when we were chanting in front of the subway station, somehow I just felt Srila Prabhupada's presence is just like so tangible. I actually started to weep. And then I thought that it's true that meeting and separation on the absolute platform are the same. Both are occasions of ecstasy. I actually felt. There was, at that time, we didn't. Oh, there's so many stories. All right. Well, I'll tell about my initiation. So at that time, you could worship. You could do deity worship if you had only first initiation. Later, as more disciples you know, we're initiated as Brahmins, then Srila Prabhupada enforced the standard that only Brahmins could do deity worship. But in the early days, even if you had first initiation, you could do some deity worship. And Satsarupa Maharaj was thinking, you know, I've been in the temple for 2 months, and, you know, some can be pretty serious, so maybe I could be initiated. So he spoke to me, and yeah. So I wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, and by then he was in Los Angeles, and he initiated me. Now that was another experience. Again, we were out on the street, and I suddenly felt, it was like a realization. It was just like so clear and real that I'm not the body. And I'm like something completely different from the body. And that was also a very joyful experience. Brahma-bhuta prasanatmana sochati nakamshati. And again, I started to weep, and it was just such a wonderful experience. So I mentioned it to some devotees, and they said, maybe Srila Prabhupada was chanting on your beads at that moment. And it's possible, because then a couple of days later, Srila Prabhupada's letter came with my beads saying, you know, and it was dated that day. And, yeah, I'm pleased to accept you as my disciple. And, you know, I marked it in your presence when you saw me, and I prayed to Krishna that this good soul may become aware of the value of Krishna consciousness. And then he said that your name is Giriraj. Giriraj is a name for the Govardhan Mountain, where Krishna used to tend his cows. And sometimes devotees take a stone from the Govardhan Mountain and worship it as a representation of Krishna. Now, there was a lot in that letter, but one thing really struck me, and that is that my name before initiation was Glenn Teton. And there are, there's a mountain range in Wyoming called the Grand Tetons. And to our knowledge at that time, there were only, we were the only family with that name, with that surname, Teton. So sort of a matter of pride, like, you know, the Tetons. And, you know, sometimes I would see a television show like some millionaire who could, you know, could have anything that money could buy. He chose to live in the Teton Mountains. And later on, not at this stage, later on, I found that Henry Ford's great-grandson, Alfred Ford, Ambrish Das, he was actually living in the Teton Mountains. That also, confirmed my my belief that, you know, the Teton Mountains were really special. And so I was special. So I got this letter that, you know, Giriraj is a name for the Govardhan Mountain. I thought, oh my gosh, Srila Prabhupada knows everything. Like, I was like so proud of my mountain name. He gave me another mountain name. A better mountain. So, yes. Many things. I'll tell another one. I mean, obviously I can't tell every event at every step, so this one was a little bit ahead. But from the first temple at 95 Glenville Avenue, we moved to a bigger place. And that was really the first property that ISKCON owned. It's a big house on 40 North Beacon Street. And so there was a young man who joined named Peter. And Peter was very eccentric. And there was a front door, and then the front door opened onto a hallway, and then there was a flight of stairs that went upstairs. The temple room was upstairs one flight. And Peter, he would just like live in that front hallway. He would just like, you know, he'd lean against the wall and stretch his legs out. And if he got tired, he'd just lie down and go to sleep in the hallway. And, you know, Prabhupada was very liberal and very accommodating, but we were thinking that this creates a bad impression on people, and, you know, and they see him. His name was Peter, and so we gave him the nickname Crazy Peter. So we're thinking, like, you know, the first thing they'll see is Crazy Peter, and they may not even want to come in, or they may not come back. So it might have been Satsarupa Maharaj or one of the other senior devotees wrote Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada replied, "What's the matter? Can't you tolerate?" So, you know, somehow Prabhupada wanted to protect him and preserve him. So then, you know, after some time, Srila Prabhupada wanted to return to India, and like he wanted the best person from each temple who could be spared, which was usually like the number two person, to go and join him. So then, you know, years passed. I mean, I may get back to the story, but many years passed. And then finally, after being in India, I came to Los Angeles. And in the meantime, there was a devotee who was translating sacred texts from Sanskrit into English. He was quite prolific. Kushakrata Prabhu. And we were reading these, you know, we were in India, and we This is after Prabhupada left. We were like spending time in Vrindavan and teaching at VIHT, and we were like reading these books, and then so 1 year I went to Los Angeles and I saw Crazy Peter in the temple room. I never imagined that after all these years he would still be there. So I asked someone, who's that? Oh, you don't know? That's Kushikrata Prabhu. Oh my God, Crazy Peter was initiated and he became Kushikrata Prabhu, and all like the most senior devotees are reading his translations of Sanskrit texts. And then I thought of Srila Prabhupada, that he had some insight that this Crazy Peter, I mean, he didn't take that stance with every crazy person, but somehow he had that insight for Crazy Peter, and the result was we got so many wonderful literatures from him. But coming back to there's so much here. I think maybe I should stop and see if you have any questions or comments. Then we will continue. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
What is your good name?
Ananda Rupa Devi Dasi.
Ananda Rupa Devi Dasi. Thank you.
Maharaj, among other things, what do you like about Prabhupada the most? What attracted you to Prabhupada the most? There are so many things about Prabhupada which are very attractive, but what is that which attracted you and what kept you going for so many years without his association?
She says there's so many things about Srila Prabhupada, but what struck me the most about him, and what is it that has kept me going for all these years? Well, I was, looking for a guru. And I felt that he knew me, inside and out, and that he could guide me properly. I was struck by his love and compassion and kindness, along with his knowledge of the absolute truth. And what's kept me going is the recollection of what he did for me and for so many others, that I really owe my life to him. And when I think of any difficulty that I might face, it's negligible compared to the difficulties that he faced. And he made all these sacrifices for us. I'll give one example. We were at the Ard Kumbh Mela in Allahabad, and it was freezing cold, especially early morning, it's freezing cold. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada was very strict. You know, everyone had to be up by 4 at the latest and be ready for Mangal Arati at 4:30. And I had been very strict myself, but at the Kumbh Mela, it was just so cold that it was easier just to... There's no heating. We were living in tents. There's no heating. It was just easier and more comfortable to stay in the sleeping bag. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, understood that we weren't getting up and coming to Mangal Arati. So one morning, although he was like so aged and frail, but one morning he came out, you know, at 4 o'clock, and, you know, he's just in his gumption, and he was taking a bath. You know, we had pumps, and this freezing cold water would come out, and, you know, the news spread, and we were like so ashamed, you know, that we're like hiding out in our sleeping bags, and Srila Prabhupada's out taking his freezing cold bath, so we all jumped out of our sleeping bags, and we also went out, and then we did it every morning, because we didn't want Srila Prabhupada to do that again. So he'd never really asked us to do anything that he wouldn't do. So there's so many instances, but when I think of them, I think, well, he did so much for us, you know, we should at least do our best to try to repay him and, you know, share with others what we got from him. And in that process we feel his presence, and that's very ecstatic. Like now, you know, we feel his presence, we're remembering him, we're discussing him, we're appreciating him. We feel his presence. And his pleasure. Any other questions or comments?
What is the best way to chant? I know you are best in that.
This is just by the way. Someone told me that it's a statistic that the best students sit at the front. Yeah, someone told me that recently. But everyone here is the best. I'm not, not saying that, but yeah. So your question was about chanting? I'm thinking, of course, there are many techniques and many principles, but one that comes to mind now was discussed at the Japa retreat in Philadelphia with His Holiness Satchinandan Swami. And so someone had asked Srila Prabhupada about how to chant. And Srila Prabhupada replied, just try to hear yourself chant sincerely. So someone brought that up to Satchinandan Swami and me. And we thought that this sounds good, but we better check and make sure if it's bona fide or not. So I wrote to Jayadvaita Swami, are you aware of this? You know, what can you tell us about it? And he was aware of it, and he confirmed that it was an actual statement of Srila Prabhupada's, although he slightly modified one word. And so that's a very deep statement, because just try to hear yourself chant. Well, that's basic, to hear ourselves chant. But just try to hear yourself chant sincerely. So what does it mean to chant sincerely? And Srila Prabhupada has made different statements in other contexts. But chant sincerely means that we're really begging the holy name, which is Krishna, to be engaged in his service. In another place, Srila Prabhupada says that the chanting is like the genuine cry of a child for its mother. So that's another way to chant in that mood. And I know some devotees do that. They consciously try to chant in that mood, like a child crying for its mother. And just try to hear yourself chant sincerely. There's two parts, chanting sincerely and then hearing yourself. And that should be our mood, that we're crying out to the holy name, to Radha and Krishna. And you know, Krishna's a person, and he will respond to us according to how we approach him. Sometimes children cry for different reasons. And, you know, sometimes they just want attention, or they want sense gratification. You know, it's not that significant. But sometimes they could be in real trouble. His Holiness Niranjan Swami told the story of a boy in the Boston Temple. His parents were pujaris. And, you know, the boy would always be roaming about the temple, and sometimes, you know, he'd cry for this reason or that reason, and no one really paid much attention. But one day, the boy was, you know, he's crying, and, oh, it's usual. But then he started to, like, cry louder. And then he started to, like, scream at the top of his voice. And everyone could hear the quality of that sound vibration. And they thought, oh my gosh, there's something serious. You know, we have to find that boy and see what the problem is. And eventually they found him. And what had happened was he had locked himself in the toilet room and he couldn't get out. And he panicked, you know. He thought, I'm stuck here. I can't get out. I might have thought he would die there. And so then, you know, we found him and let him out. So that's the quality of the crying out. Even we can. Yeah, that was one example. We can perceive the underlying mood of chanting. For example, if you ever go to Vrindavan, to Loy Bazaar, so the merchants will say, Hare Krishna Prabhu, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, come, come Prabhu, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So what is that Hare Krishna? What is his consciousness? Oh, here's a customer, I can make some money. He's saying Hare Krishna with his mouth, but with his mind he's thinking, ooh, a foreign devotee, I could get a good sale here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Prabhu, Hare Krishna. He's really thinking, money, money, money. So, even we can detect to some degree, the consciousness of a person in the way he's chanting. So Krishna also knows. But one thing that gives me solace, this was from the Japa retreat at Montgomery, Texas, with His Grace Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. And he made the point that just spending time with the holy name will please the holy name. Even if our mind is wandering and even if we're, you know, a little distracted or a little sleepy or whatever it is, but just spending that time shows the holy name that we want to develop our relationship with him. And if nothing else, that pleases the holy name, that we're making that effort and spending that time. It's like sometimes they say the main thing is to just show up. So we just show up to the holy name, to job. Just show up. That itself is a good beginning. Hare Krishna. Yes, sir. What is your good? I would like everyone to introduce yourself. So,
Shyamakundadas. Guruji, you spent a lot of time in Radharasa Bihari temple, mm-hmm. So was it your own decision or is this something you had assignment from Prabhupada?
Yes, Shyamakund Prabhu says that I spent a lot of time at the Radharasa Bihari temple in Juhu. Was it my decision or was it something that Srila Prabhupada asked me to do? It was not my decision. And I think most of the devotees who came from America thought of Vrindavan or Mayapur. And I also did. So for a while I was thinking, you know, this is just, you know, I'm here now, but eventually I might go to Vrindavan. And then one day I just got it that Srila Prabhupada wants me to stay here. And I surrendered to it. And as soon as I did that, my mood completely changed. You know, my attitude completely changed. I felt I'm part of Bombay. Like, you know, I'm not going anywhere. And the other people of Bombay aren't going anywhere. So we might as well get to know each other. and you know, have a nice relationship. And whenever I mean, I always tried to deal nicely with everyone, but especially them, whenever I met someone, I thought, well, it doesn't matter if he doesn't become a life member or give a donation. Because I'm not going anywhere and he's not going anywhere. We may meet again. And at least I should leave him with a good impression so the next time we meet he'll be open. So that was a really profound change. And then then I didn't distinguish. It was like my, like they say, Prabhudatta Desh. Prabhudatta Desh means the place given by the spiritual master to the disciple as the place of service to the spiritual master. So that was my Prabhudatta Desh that was given to me out of by Srila Prabhupada out of his mercy. And at one stage, he said that Srila Madhvacharya had established Maths as a place, as places to give his disciples a platform to preach. He said it. So in this way, I'm establishing the Juhu Temple, right? For you and others, I'm sure. So, it's very important that we don't make material distinctions in devotional service. You know, like that. You know, on the absolute platform, there's no difference between offering arati to the deities and cleaning the toilet. There's no difference. And if we make a distinction, it means there's a defect in our understanding. So. And in a sort of, I won't comment yet, I'll just tell you the incident. So after, you know, serving in India for about 3 years, I got very sick with jaundice. Actually, I had it and I recovered, and then I had a relapse. It's like often the relapse is harder to recover from than the initial onset. So that was the case. And, you know, at that stage, you know, Srila Prabhupada said, you know, as long as Giriraj remains in Bombay, he won't be able to get better. And so I was very sick and I was very weak. But, you know, I had to see Srila Prabhupada before I left. And so Tamal Krishna Goswami was the GBC. By the way, today's his Vyas Puja Day. So Tamal Krishna Goswami was the GBC, And, you know, he didn't want me to leave. And, but, you know, Prabhupada said as long as Dhiraj stays in Bombay, he won't be able to get better. So I went to see him, went to see Srila Prabhupada, and Tamalakrishna Goswami was in the room. And Srila Prabhupada said, but it was, you know, so he said to Tamalakrishna Goswami that in Los Angeles, Karandar will give Giriraj rasgulla and sandesh, which you could not do. Because I guess sweets are good for...
Yeah.
So... so then I went to Los Angeles, and I got better. I gradually got better. And so then I, you know, as I got better, I was able to start to come into Srila Prabhupada's room when he was meeting with devotees, and even started to go on morning walks. And at a certain stage, he felt it was time for me to go back. Can we turn off the fans for a minute or at least this one? I don't know what it is. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada used the phrase, you know, he felt it was time for me to go back, I could go back, and he used the phrase, back home, back to Bombay. And yeah, I took it as like, sort of like an indirect blessing, you know, go back to your service in Bombay, go back home. But, so yeah, I did, and like we sing, Guru Mukha Padya Bhakya, Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya, Chite Te Kori Aikya, that should make the instructions of the spiritual master one with your heart, and don't desire anything else. So at first there was a distinction. You know, like the distinction you raised in the question, was it my desire, was it Prabhupada's desire? And it was not my desire, but it was Prabhupada's desire. But then after a while, that distinction didn't exist. Very good. Yes?
As Nilamani Das, just want to ask you, What do you think, reflecting on all these years, was maybe perhaps the most challenging or most memorable times during your spiritual career?
Oh, there are many, but I mean, one very memorable time was when I was in Madras, and although I, you know, there was a party of devotees. We were like the first ones who went. But gradually the others were, you know, moved to other places to do service, and I was left alone. But it was really, I think, one of the best experience I ever had. I was alone, I was very disciplined and regulated. You know, I'd get up and I did like a little mangalarti, and then I would chant all my rounds and read a little, and then I would start making phone calls to meet people. And that was also, at a certain stage, I had like a little change of heart. At first I had like a certain conception that I wanted the person to do something particular, like become a life member. Or then when we were organizing the program for Srila Prabhupada, you know, to contribute in a particular way. But after a while, I guess a sort of surrender to Krishna's will. You know, like I had faith in Krishna. Everything will work out all right. And I don't need to control what this person does or that person does. But whatever Krishna in the heart inspires them to offer, you know, whatever they themselves want to offer, I should just accept it. And like there was one man, B.L. Chaudhry. You know, usually I'd want people to, you know, to become life members or, you know, take an advertisement in the souvenir or something. And he didn't want to do any of those things. But in the end, he did so much service. He did like amazing service for Prabhupada's program. So that was, yeah, so I didn't really try to impose. I just saw what they wanted to offer, and I would accept it gladly. And yeah, Srila Prabhupada was very pleased. Yes.
Actually, I just want to tell you something that Radharas, we are deities of my heart. And every time I go there, I remember you. Because you worked so hard to build that temple. And they always reciprocate with me. Such beautiful deities.
That's nice.
And, would you like to give some advice to all of us regarding our spiritual life?
Well, I was, that was at Gita Nagari. Yes. Our god sister Rukmini Devi wanted me to tell a story, but there was no time. So I'll tell the story now, because it's related to Madras. And it might have some, I'm sure it has some relevance somewhere. So, so I was meeting people in Madras, and I was preaching the way I heard Srila Prabhupada preach. But I started to get, I guess you could say, advice from friends that I shouldn't preach the way I was preaching. I shouldn't criticize others. I should just state positively what I want to say about Krishna consciousness, but I shouldn't say anything negative about anyone else. So, you know, I heard what they said, but I wasn't sure how to apply it, because that wasn't the way Srila Prabhupada preached. And But so many people were saying it, I thought maybe Krishna's trying to tell me something. So, and in the meantime, I'd written Srila Prabhupada explaining the situation. So I had an appointment with an industrialist, and I thought, okay, I'm not going to say anything negative about any other person or any other philosophy or any other process. So, you know, I came to the man's office. He had a big compound. He had his office, his factory, his residence. And so I showed him our pictures. And showed, you know, Prabhupada said, just put all my books on the man's table and he'll become a life member. So I put all the books on his table. And I did everything. And then he said, what about Shankaracharya? You said so many things about so many other figures. What about Shankaracharya? So I said, yes, he's also one of the great acharyas of India. He said, well, what about him? Why didn't you say anything about him? Well, what do you think of him? So I said, yeah, he's, you know, but he just kept pushing, yeah, pressing, probing. He just wouldn't. And then finally I just came out with the whole thing that he's you know, an incarnation of Lord Shiva, and he's teaching veiled Buddhism, and everything. I took out the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and I read the quotations of about Shankaracharya, but that was, you know, that wasn't, as we would say today, like politically correct. So that was it. And, well, you know, I tried, but I failed. So I. You know, put all the pictures back in my briefcase, put all the books back in my briefcase, took back the form, packed up my briefcase, and ready to leave. So, you know, he was somewhat cultured, so he was escorting me to the gate of the compound. And he said, you know, before you leave, I want you to come in my home and see my temple. And I thought, you know, he's going to have a Shiva Linga. He's going to want me to, like, offer full obeisances. And if I don't, he's going to think I'm sectarian. And, you know, I looked at him in the eyes like, do I really have to do this? And he looked back, yes, you really have to do this. Okay. So he went into his house, and, you know, he took me to his temple room. And it was like pretty big, for a home temple, it was pretty big. It was like this section that we're in, maybe half that big. It was like white tiles. And there was like a elevated platform. And on the platform were deities of Radha and Krishna. Oh my God. I was like so happy because there, almost all the Vaishnav temples in Madras were Vishnu, like Vaikuntha mood. And there's one temple, near the sea of Parthasarathi. But he's a little, he has a mustache, and But there, I didn't see Radha Krishna anywhere. I was like really happy, and I offered obeisances. And then I looked at him, and you know, like, what is this? And he said that me and my family are all devotees of Radha and Krishna, and we have been devotees of Radha and Krishna for generations. And I was just testing you. And I'm very pleased with you. You did not compromise. And I will be very happy to become your life member. And so we went back to his office. I took out the books again. Back to Godhead, took out the form, you know, he filled in the form, paid the whole amount in one, with one check, and he became a life member. So I thought, well, maybe what I've been doing isn't wrong. But I wasn't completely sure, but I was thinking, maybe it's not wrong. And then when I got back to the place where I was staying, there was a letter from Srila Prabhupada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I opened it up and, you know, my eyes went down and I think the second paragraph, the words like jumped out of the page. Mm. And he said, the fact is that I am the only one in India who is criticizing not only impersonalism and demigod worship, but anything that falls short of complete surrender to Krishna. We must declare it boldly that Krishna is the supreme Godhead and all others are his part and parcel servants. And we should not dream of peace and prosperity unless we, surrender to Krishna as the Supreme Godhead. And then he said, my Guru Maharaj never compromised in his preaching, and I will never compromise in my preaching, and similarly, none of my disciples should compromise in their preaching, but we must declare it boldly. So that was like, then I felt this is the confirmation. So, you know, it may seem hard, but actually, it's easier to speak the truth. But there are ways of speaking the truth. You know, but yeah, we should speak the truth. So, yeah, when we speak the truth and people respond, you know, two things. One is it increases our faith, and the other is Krishna's pleased. I don't know if I said the right thing or not, but at the end of the Sadhu Sangha retreat, there was a lady who was she sort of covers kirtan, you know, and so she asked me, you know, what do I think about the rise in popularity of kirtan? So I said, it's good if by their interest in kirtan, they get the association of pure devotees and learn the proper method of chanting the holy name. Then it can bestow upon them the greatest benefit. But there's There's a method for everything. Like Srila Prabhupada said, there's a method for making puris. There's a method for playing the piano. You know, there's a method for everything. So there's also a method for making advancement in spiritual life. There's a method for chanting the holy name. And without learning the proper method, people will not get the real benefit. They won't. But the good side of the popularity of kirtan is that they may get the association of pure devotees who will teach them the proper method, and then they can get the real benefit. So she said, thank you for being so frank. Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ramachandras. My question is that in Prabhupada's time, the devotees were very direct. Their attire, their Vaishnava attire, Prabhupada's clothes. In today's days, the day and age, we see that sometimes we, larger crowds, when we preach through kirtan or yoga, Prabhupada's books are not introduced. Vaishnava attires are not introduced. In fact, you're asked to refrain from those things because they may
scare.
Yes, it's scare or something. But at the same time, we see our leaders, like sannyasis, they would never budge from that most of the time, unless it's a country where you're not allowed to wear devotional clothes. But we see the next generation leaders refrain from these being bold. Can you say a few words about this situation, or is it? I see a big difference. Personally, when I am preaching, no matter where, I would not want to hide Prabhupada's books. But there are programs that's asked to refrain from.
Well, there are a number of elements to your question. As far as dress, I have attended programs that are part of very successful approaches. And I've seen that at those programs, there's sort of a mixture of dress. The first time I noticed it was at ISKCON San Jose under Vaisheshika Prabhu's leadership. And it was a program especially meant to attract Westerners. And I saw that not everyone was wearing Vaishnav dress, although in the usual programs they do. And at first I thought, well, you know, is it the timing? They were too busy to go home and change. But after a while, I realized that actually they're doing it deliberately. And I saw the same thing at another place, very successful program in Charlottesville, Virginia, at the university. And so with Vaisheshika Prabhu, I said, you know, I told him what I thought at first and then what I thought later, and he said, yes, that's right. We want people who come to feel comfortable, like they could fit in, that they don't have to, you know, shave their heads and wear dhotis or saris in order to be with us. And the devotee in charge of the program in Charlottesville said something similar, that she doesn't want to have such a strong sense of us and them. So there will be people in Vaishnav dress, but not everyone fully. And there's a reason behind it. You know, it may not be so necessary with Indians, because this is like their cultural, original cultural dress, but with Westerners, you know, I could see the logic, and I can see the success from the approach. That was the main thing. As far as Prabhupada's books, I don't know what to say about that, because in the two examples that I gave, like Vaisheshika Prabhu is like all Prabhupada's books. I mean, so that, yeah, I don't know about that. And even at the program at UVA, they're very open about offering Prabhupada's books. They have like what they call a book club, and they go through, you know, different books, but I think most of them are Prabhupada's books. Maybe all of the books are Prabhupada's books, but definitely most of them are Prabhupada's books. So I haven't really been in a situation where I've seen that, and I haven't had a chance to ask the people, you know, why they wouldn't be offering Srila Prabhupada's books. But on my own, I can't think of a good reason. You know, there are so many people that have become devotees just by reading Srila Prabhupada's books. There's one, in fact, I thought of, you know, like compiling all these stories, like amazing stories. But there's one American young man in San Diego. Somehow he got a book. And, you know, he opened it up. And, you know, like practically the first thing he read was you know, if all you do is eat, sleep, mate, and defend without inquiring into the higher values of life, you're no better than an animal. And, you know, he read it, he thought, yeah, that's true. I mean, there are just so many people. Ratatva Goswami told a story that he was distributing books at a welcome center in Florida. And he gave someone a book. And the, you know, the man said, what's it about? It's about yoga, how to be more peaceful and happy in life. So he opened up the book and he reads the sentence. People who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses do not glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he said to Ratatva Goswami, what does this have to do with yoga? So anyway, Ratatva Goswami started to explain it. And then the man's wife, he was in the parking lot, his wife went into the welcome center, and so she came out. She said, oh, hi, honey, what's happening? He said, oh, nothing, I'm taking a book. And he gave a good donation, and he took the book. He wasn't put off by this, you know, dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So, I mean, there are just so many people who have really been affected very strongly and favorably by Srila Prabhupada's preaching, which is Krishna's preaching. one of our best devotees in Bombay, I mean congregation, was Mr. P.L. Sethi. And the first time he met Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada asked him, you know, what's your daily schedule? He said, I get up, I wash my mouth, I have some toast and a cup of tea, and I read the newspaper, and I go to work. And Srila Prabhupada said, and what's the difference between you and a pig? And Mr. Sethi thought about it and said, yeah, that's a good point. What is the difference? And, you know, and he said, so what should I do? And he said, you know, you should invite the devotees every weekend and have Harinam Sankirtan and distribute prasad. But having said all of that, and with, you know, great faith in Srila Prabhupada's books and the potency of his books, I still wouldn't want to pass judgment without hearing from the people who are adopting the strategy of not presenting Srila Prabhupada's books. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
Sorry, I had a question. During the final times of Srila Prabhupada, I've heard that you had some intimate association with Prabhupada where Srila Prabhupada mentioned something about intelligent organization.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. He's asking about an incident which I shall describe. It was in Srila Prabhupada's last weeks, and I was sleeping on the roof of the Gurukul building in Vrindavan, and in the middle of the night, I don't know, midnight or 1 a.m, Prabhupada's servant woke me up and said, Prabhupada wants to see you. So I sort of freshened up and went into his room. And he asked, do you think the movement will go on without me? And I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada, as long as the devotees are sincere and chant Hare Krishna and follow the regulative principles, it will be successful. And then, and with great difficulty, Srila Prabhupada could utter a word because he was so weak. And yeah, so with great difficulty he said, organization, organization, and intelligence. So my understanding of that is that, of course, we have to be sincere and chant Hare Krishna and follow the regulative principles. But even a Bhajana Nandi will do that. But Srila Prabhupada was very much a Gaudiya Nandi. And so to spread Krishna consciousness, we need organization and intelligence. We need to apply our intelligence to the spread of Krishna consciousness. So I think that was very instructive, especially for me, but for everyone. And, that generally, you know, the collective intelligence is greater than the individual's intelligence. And so it really means, you know, to work together with intelligence, how to organize ourselves in the best way to spread Krishna consciousness. And that also includes, you know, nourishing the devotees that we have. Because Srila Prabhupada also said it's more important to maintain a devotee than to try to make a new devotee. So we have to, you know, see all sides. And, yeah. And, you know, it's not easy to cooperate. May not be easy. At the Hyderabad farm, at one stage, there are some very strong individuals. Like, very strong individuals. And I heard that Srila Prabhupada told them that you meet together, you fight like cats and dogs, and then when you all agree, you go ahead. That's our service. Any other questions or comments? All right, well, I think we have 5 minutes left. Of course, I just made that up myself. Yes, okay.
With the Bombay temple, I'm Kusum Mataji, with the Bombay temple, with all that struggle and everything, what was the inner thing was keeping everybody going? Because when we read about all the description today, it was like so much. So what was there that was keeping you all going with all that struggle?
Well, what was keeping? Well, I was, you know, what was keeping us going was Srila Prabhupada. But I think I should speak about what was keeping Srila Prabhupada going. And that is that he promised Radharasa Bihari that you just sit down here and I will build a temple for you. So it was really his personal commitment and service to Radharasa Bihari. And then we were just following him. But there were times along the way when some of the disciples, even in the beginning actually, some of the disciples opposed the move to Juhu. They felt it was too far away from the city and too crude and, you know, and even along the way they canceled the agreement, you know. But whatever it was, Srila Prabhupada was just fixed, you know, in his determination, and in the end, he was successful. And, yeah, it's amazing. And at the end, and I think in Vrindavan in 1977, Tamal Krishna Goswami said that to Srila Prabhupada that you always came out victorious. Every single time you came out victorious. And Juhu, I never imagined. I think only you and Radharasa Bihari could have known. And then he said, you know, it was, someone should write a book about it. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it is history. It is worth writing. So, and another time, yeah. Anyway, we do need to write that book. And, but yeah, it really shows how, not just how personal Krishna consciousness is, but how Srila Prabhupada saw that the deity is Krishna. you know. We may or may not, but he did that whole, underwent that whole huge struggle because he knew that Krishna is there, that the deity is Krishna. So it's very instructive for us. Is that all right?
We are launching to build a new temple for Parsipani, in Parsipani, so that Tuvapo temple can move. Can you give us some practical guidelines? Because we are facing a struggle to raise the funds, start building the temple, because you have built such a large, very, very large temple. Maybe you can give us some guidelines.
I think we're out of time. No, I'm not. I'm not, we could discuss that maybe afterwards. But seriously, it's not, people are already walking out. It's a good question.
We have, Viraswami has written three books. The first one is called The Watering the Sea. These are all the anecdotes and personal instructions he received from Guru Prabhupada. The second one is called Many Moons. These are all the saintly Vaishnava disciples of Guru Prabhupada, who's
disciples and grand disciples.
Disciples and grand disciples who Guru Swami had a fortune to serve Guru Prabhupada. He has written a book about that. And this last book, is, the latest book, is called Life's Final Exam: Death and Dying from the Vedic Perspective. This is the perspective of devotees leaving their body, and the devotees who took care of them, devotees remembering them, and philosophical articles about death and dying from the perspective of Krishna consciousness. So we have a book table outside, and anybody who would like to purchase the books, please get a book.
Hare Krishna.